captain's log. Additional entry. Since our mission was routine, we had beamed down to the planet without suspicion.
Catapult of propaganda.
Alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military-industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, and we're coming to you on Labor Day 2006.
Well, happy laboring today.
Those of you in labor, best luck to you.
You'll look back on this and think, well, never mind. Well, interesting week we've had here in Missouri. We've experienced our first football game Saturday in Columbia, Missouri.
Tailgating.
It's an
art form here. They fry donuts.
Yes, that's really unusual. Now, I didn't get to experience this. I worked at the tailgate.
I think that's the real reason we're in Columbia, Missouri.
Yeah.
Because the tailgaters here deep fry donuts.
Seriously, Sharon found a news story in the local paper about somebody who was frying donuts at the tailgate on Saturday at the Missouri-Murray State game. And I just want to know which tailgate that was, because clearly I was at the wrong one.
You were.
Yeah. The company I work for, the radio station group, has a big tailgate, you know, big sponsored thing, and everybody has to turn out who works there. And I spent 2 hours putting cold beverages into plastic cups right from the tapper for two straight hours. Well, not two straight. It was about an hour and a half before things ran out. But I went through two full kegs and only shut down the tap three times, and one of those was to change out an empty. So,
well, but you need to back up and explain that the police department,
yes,
decided that only permitted people could have beer.
Yeah, apparently,
or quantities of beer.
Yeah, apparently, at the University of Missouri in the past, as it probably is for many other large schools, even small colleges, it's sort of a tradition in the U.S., if you're outside the U.S., to have what's known as a tailgate party, which basically is you open up the back of your vehicle, pull out a cooler full of food and drink, and have a picnic in the parking lot before the game.
Mm-hmm.
And as Sharon said, it's become somewhat of an art form here and other big cities or big college towns. But the city of Columbia, actually the campus police, decided that this year there would be no more keg beer at the tailgates except for those big corporate events such as the one our company participates in. And suddenly people would, wait a minute.
But you guys were very popular.
Yeah. See, Missouri played Murray State in its first game. Murray State is a smaller school from South Kentucky, and they were beaten terribly by the Missouri football team. It was not a game that drew a huge crowd because it was a tune-up, essentially. But somehow, we managed to go through more beer at this tailgate than they have for the big games against Kansas, the arch rivals, Kansas, Nebraska, Colorado. Never happened before in the 5 or 6 year history of this weekly tailgate thing that they do. Had they gone through 7 full kegs of beer in 1.5 hours.
I heard that Derek Gilbert,
yeah,
the drive host, was pouring beers.
So anyway,
it was an interesting week.
Yeah.
Those of you who have been paying attention to Watcher Magazine know that I'm on vacation, taking some time off from it. My plan at the time that I wrote the note that was like the end of August, August 30th, 31st, something like that, was to take the entire month of September off. That's still my tentative plan, and the reason for that is because, as I put in the forum, to be perfectly honest, I was going through a bout of depression. You might be able to tell from my voice that I'm really feeling pretty good right now. I'm definitely on the mend, and the temptation when you're getting better, it's like when you're taking medicine for a cold, you start feeling better. The temptation is to stop the therapy. No, that's not what I'm going to do. I'm just praising God that I feel better, and I thank you for every email I got, for all the encouraging words on the forum. I know I didn't answer them. Derek answered for me. I appreciate that because honestly, what part of the therapy is taking a vacation from the internet, and it is paying off. I'm playing solitaire and putting together a puzzle. And it's very therapeutic. Drop those pieces I can't find.
Yeah. Intellectual pursuits that you don't often have the time to engage in when you're trying to work on something that requires really editing a fair-sized news journal on a daily basis.
Not only that, it took time doing that. It wasn't just that, but also it required spending hours doing nothing but reading news and sifting through it. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the day, I would continue to monitor the news to make sure if something broke. And you know, those who have been reading Watcher magazine for a while know that if something breaks, I would be right there typing in sentence by sentence that I heard breaking on the news. So you would oftentimes get it first from Watcher magazine, or very quickly, one of the first sources. And because of that, there was this need to be immersed in, frankly, bad news.
Right.
And that's another part of my therapy, is staying away from news. So I am totally not up to snuff, which is why in this week's PID Radio, Derek had a great conversation with another woman. Not with me, but with a great gal named Laura Mansfield. You want to tell them about that?
Yeah, Laura Mansfield is an intelligence analyst we first discovered through the Northeast Intelligence Network. She was affiliated with them several years back and has now gone off on her own and has an excellent website, lauramansfield.com. She is unique in that she speaks and reads Arabic fluently. And we will do another program with her in the future that goes into exactly why and how she came by those skills. But she monitors Arabic language websites, news groups, forums, and mailing lists for information. And because she speaks Arabic and has spent a fair amount of time in that culture, she lived in Egypt for 7 years. She has some unique insights into what news is worth paying attention to. Last week, Thursday, in fact, she was a guest on my radio program, and we didn't really pat ourselves on the back for it, but as she came on the air, within minutes of going on the air, she had discovered the banner ad at an Arabic language news site announcing the forthcoming videotape that you've heard about since then, the one that features Azam the American, Adam Gaidan, and Ayman al-Zawahiri. So we essentially had a world exclusive, world, you know, we broke the news on our little radio station here in Columbia, Missouri.
You know, and frankly, I think that you may be doing more of that because, if I understand it right, Derek, Laura is going to be a weekly feature.
Right, right. She's going to be on every week except for those nights where she's got PTA.
Now, that's seriously the priorities that
she has her priorities.
She right truly does. Good for her. She's a really great gal.
Yeah, and she's been a font of information. And she shares some insights with us that we ought to be getting from the mainstream news media. She's not alarmist. And one of the things that we are getting frustrated by in the mainstream media is the overuse of the news alert for every little thing. News alert!
It almost seems
John Mark Carr's plane is almost ready to land.
Exactly. Oh, John Mark Carr. Don't even get me started on that. The overuse of that, the result, of course, is that you cease to pay attention to it.
Right.
And maybe there's a reason for that.
It could be.
Yeah.
Could be. Numbing us to what may be coming. But she does have some insights that are worth hearing and that you're not hearing from the mainstream media. And so without further ado, let's bring you our discussion with Laura Mansfield. We're pleased to have with us Laura Mansfield, intelligence analyst and author of several very informative books. The most recent, In His Own Words, a translation of the writings of Dr. Ayman al-Zawahiri. Laura, thank you for joining us on PID Radio.
Well, thank you for having me here.
You were the first, as far as I know, to tip us off to the existence of the new tape from Al-Qaeda's number two man, al-Zawahiri, which was just released this weekend. How did you find out about it, and what's the significance of this new videotape?
Well, I had a hunch that we were getting we'd get a pre-9/11 tape. I wasn't expecting it quite this early. And I'm still not convinced this is the 9/11 commemorative tape that we were expecting from Al-Qaeda. But I had already set up some software to monitor the Arabic language message boards on a, you know, actually several times an hour, and to let me know if anything like this was posted. And so as soon as it popped up there, within a couple of minutes, I got an email letting me know it was there from my monitoring software. And then I was able to go out, you know, download the announcement, figure out what they were talking about. And I think we did this actually, happened just about the time I went on the air the other night with you. And then I guess it was early Saturday afternoon. Same thing happened. My monitoring software pinged me, and so the tape had been posted. And so I went over, downloaded it, and posted it on the internet up to my website, notified some of my media contacts, and the rest is history. They post these, they use it in a pretty consistent manner. They use the same technique over and over, and so they're pretty predictable.
It was quite an honor to, by the way, for you to offer us that exclusive. We even trumpeted our own horn on that on the local radio station here, but it was kind of neat to be able to scoop the big news networks on the forthcoming tape before CNN, Fox News, MSNBC had it. So what's the pattern that they use to announce a forthcoming videotape?
Well, over the last year, we've seen this pretty much set in stone. What they'll do is they'll announce 24 to 48 hours before a video is released. They'll announce that it has been, that it's coming out. They'll put a banner saying, you know, whatever the topic of the tape is, and then they'll say coming soon. And then, of course, everybody starts monitoring to try to see who can catch it first. Sometimes, of course, they don't tell you whether it's coming out on the internet or El Jazeera, or where it's going to come out first. So, you know, they post it somewhere. What happens, I think, is when they give this heads up, they're actually putting the video in the hands of the people who are responsible for uploading it to file sharing websites,
mm-hmm.
YouSendIt and things like that. And when they've completed that, then they post it on the internet.
Now,
or they announce that the posting is on the internet. It's actually, there's some stuff going on that I'm not going to, I don't really want to put in the public domain, so I'll defer on it. But let's just say that if I'm really careful and pay attention to what's going on, I can usually get probably anywhere from at least a 3 to 6 hour advance notice of these things, because I've kind of figured out where they're posting it.
Hmm. Now, you spotted a banner ad, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm. That was a banner ad, and it said coming soon from a Sahab, which is the media production arm of Al-Qaeda. There would be a tape or a message from a zombie American and Dr. Ayman Zarqawi, and it was going to be called An Invitation to Islam.
Now, on the interview on the radio program, you said that that was ominous. Why is that?
Well, it's ominous because the brand of Islam that Al-Qaeda and the other Islamists ascribe to says that they need to give us a warning. As a matter of fact, Bin Laden received a lot of flack after the 9/11 attacks because he didn't give us a chance to repent and convert before he attacked us. A lot of purists in the Islamic world felt like he needed to give us an advance warning and a chance to change our ways. Now, this particular video, I spent most of the day yesterday transcribing the video, and it was directed to the American people, but Ayman Zarqawi say it's for the American people, and Adam Gadon, who's from Orange County, California, say it's directed to the American people. The video itself, you know, you've seen these videos before where they say, we want you to convert and, you know, we're going to give you one last chance. This wasn't one of those videos. There's nothing in there mentioning a last chance. Gadon actually goes so far as to say, your end is coming. It could be tomorrow, basically. He doesn't say when. It's almost more of a, it's not a repent or die tape. It's more like, your end is coming. Repent so you don't go to hell tape. It's a very ominous tape. If you go to my website and read the transcript, actually, I'd encourage everybody to go to the website and read the transcript. You know, there's also the possibility they could be doing just one humongous bluff. They may just want to be rattling our chains and getting us all up in arms coming up on the anniversary of 9/11. And I think we need to keep that in perspective that they could be just flat out bluffing. I mean, Adam Goodon has done that before. He's come out and said there were attacks imminent. I believe he came out a year or so ago and said attacks were imminent in L.A. And, of course, you know, nothing's happened. So, you know, you need to keep it in perspective, but at the same time, I don't think we need to underestimate the seriousness of this message that they sent to us.
So, the Wahhabi sect, or the sect to which Al-Qaeda belongs, believes that it's okay to commit an act of terror as long as they give us this invitation first, and this tape, in your view, is this invitation to convert.
Well, they actually have said it's the invitation to convert. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've said it's the invitation to Islam, so I think we have to take them at their word. Now, again, it could be one humongous bluff on their part. You know, I have no way of knowing for sure, but I think we definitely need to increase our vigilance. We need to pay attention to what's going on around us, definitely.
You mentioned a 9/11 commemorative tape. Have they been issuing tapes to commemorate 9/11 each year since the attack?
Yes, and they've issued tapes pretty close to the anniversary, but there's been a lot of chatter that on the boards that something big, some major tape is in the works. And frankly, I don't think this is it. I don't think this tape is what we're waiting for. If we're waiting for a 9/11 commemorative tape, it's just, it doesn't, I really don't know how to explain it except to say it doesn't ring right. There's something missing from it. Well, first of all, Adam Goodon is definitely not Ayman Zawahiri, and he's definitely not Osama bin Laden, and I don't think they would put him in a position to deliver such an important tape, like a 9/11 commemorative tape. On the other hand, they would put him in a position to address his fellow Americans, because they would think that he could, you know, he might stand a better chance of reaching us. So, I don't know. The one thing I will say is that Goodon is a very persuasive speaker. He plays every single card you can imagine. He plays the race. He plays persecution of women card. He plays all of them.
And the bulk of the tape is Goodon speaking as opposed to Al-Zawahiri?
That's something quite different. What's interesting is Zawahiri's shown in, I guess, a solid black background, where Goodon is shown in an office in front of a computer. You can see his books around him.
Hmm. But Goodon is not somebody high enough in the hierarchy that you would consider this to be the big tape that you've been seeing the chatter on.
I think he's definitely moving up in the hierarchy. I think he's definitely gaining some points in the food chain, but I don't think he's not there yet. Whether he gets there or not, you know, it's hard to say. But I don't see any indications that he's that high up the prestige ladder at this point.
For people who aren't familiar with your work and the resources you make available at lauramansfield.com and how you collect this information, let's talk about where you see this chatter. Where do you go to find information about forthcoming messages from Al-Qaeda or possible coming attacks that are being planned?
Well, what we do is we go out to the various Arabic language message boards. We don't necessarily go to all the, you know, the big famous ones. We go, you know, some of the best information comes from these little obscure sites that everybody doesn't monitor. On the other hand, announcements tend to be released on the big ones because they know the news media is monitoring those sites and they want to get the word out. Anyway, we monitor all of them. I have software that goes out there, archives the forums, and then I can read them offline and also have an archive available in case a posting gets pulled, which happens from time to time. And, you know, so we've seen cases where people appear to be sending messages. They'll post a message, and then somebody will post a response, and then the whole message thread will disappear. But there's nothing offensive in the message, so you can't help but wonder if they're using it as a dead drop or something. And so that's why we archive everything.
How extensively does Al-Qaeda or Islamic terrorists in general use message boards and forums to communicate?
They use them very extensively. If you go back and look, actually, this is something I haven't talked about, so you're getting another scoop here. if you go back and look at the plot that was thwarted in New York this summer, mm-hmm. the one about the tunnels.
Oh, was this the group from Miami that was arrested?
No, this was before that. This was
okay.
this was a Lebanese guy who was picked up. It was right after the Canadian arrest.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay, when I look back, I guess it would have been the first week of July. Anyway, the guy that was arrested was a Lebanese. He was picked up in Lebanon. And he had been planning and plotting on the Internet. Now, we've gone back and we've actually found his postings. We've been archiving them along and along. And, of course, we've got this nice audit trail of these, we could watch his anti-Semitism growing and his frustration growing, especially after the war with Iraq. Before the U.S. moved into Baghdad, he was kind of, he wasn't quite as virulent. And then it was just really interesting. The other thing that was interesting was he was posting in English, not Arabic.
That seems a little unwise if you're a potential terrorist.
No, nobody took him seriously. Everybody thought he was just, somebody yanking people's chains. See, the thing about the Arabic language message board, like any message board, is you go out there and half the people are playing games. A lot of the people aren't serious. They're just sitting there talking. On some of these boards, you have organizations that monitor boards actually going out, seeding information on the boards to try to get people to start talking to them. We've seen cases where people have put information on boards and then turned around and reported it in the news. I mean, there's a lot of bogus stuff going out there on these boards, and you've got to be careful. So what we do is when we see someone posting, we assign a weight to that person and start a dossier and watch the way that person's style develops. If somebody comes on and posts this afternoon, they're going to do, X or Y, and I've never seen them post before, I'll log it. I'll take note of it, but I'm not going to pay too much attention to it.
Okay. And then over time, you just monitor the frequency and the style of the posts? And
sure. You take a look at the track record. Has the person been talking about something? I mean, granted, there are times when if it looks like it's an imminent threat or something, we will forward it on to law enforcement and let them make the decision as to whether it's credible or not. But, I don't tend to get too worked up over people who are posting for the first time on a board, because chances are there's somebody out there who's playing games. On the other hand, some of these guys have kind of figured this out, and so you can't make wholesale statements like that anymore. They're getting smarter. The bottom line is the Internet is probably one of the, there's some analysts out there who believe the Internet is the reason Al-Qaeda continues to exist. I'm not so sure they're too far wrong. Dr. Gabriel Wyman of the University of Haifa in Israel has done some remarkable research on the Internet, and I strongly encourage people to read his writings because they're just incredible.
What's his name again?
Dr. Gabriel Wyman. He's a fellow with the U.S. Institute for Peace, and a professor at the University of Haifa. And I have links to some of his material on my website.
Okay. And again, Laura's website is lauramansfield.com. How receptive is law enforcement to the information you provide?
Very, very. It's in some cases, we'll get calls from them asking us, have we seen anything on such and such? So, we're talking about relationships we've developed with law enforcement over the years, and so, it's not just some random phone call. They know who we are when we call and give them information, and, they know we're credible, and then they know where to go. And, they know, where it came from.
Okay. Now, and at a future date, I'd like, when Sharon is here, to go in a little more depth into your background and why law enforcement would give your knowledge and experience some credibility. Want to move on to another topic that you recently posted on your website, which I found very interesting. The name game. Just a very, what seemed to me to be a very simple detail, but one that appears to be causing some problems for those in law enforcement who are tracking potential terrorists. Your article, The Name Game, can you talk about the problems we have in tracking who these characters are?
Well, see, the thing is, it's not just impacting law enforcement. It impacts every single business in this country that does business overseas or has to deal with looking at the terrorist list to find out whether they're going to be sending money to a designated terror entity. In a lot of cases, if the person is on that, the person may or the person on that list may or may not be the person you're doing business with because they changed their name. In the Arabic world, in the Arabic speaking world, and most of the Islamic world, first of all, family names, although they're becoming more and more used, are not as entrenched as they are here in the U.S. And so, for example, you know, you've got, if you look at my last name, you'll find my grandmother has it, my father had the same last name, my grandfather had the same last name, and so on back for generations, mm-hmm. all the way back to, gosh, pre-revolution. But if you take a look in the Middle East, you're going to find that in many cases, they will take their father's name and their grandfather's name in a manner very much like the Russians do. I think people are more familiar with that, mm-hmm. because of the Russian literature that most of us read in school. But the, for example, a Russian girl would take her father's name with a special suffix, and a Russian boy would take his father's name with a special suffix as their middle name.
Or like my Welsh ancestors would do, where you basically would have guys named Owen, App, Humphrey, App, Hugh, App, you know, going back for 15 or 16 generations. Right, yeah.
Exactly the same thing. Exactly. And, you know, it's kind of like in the Bible you'll see, and so-and-so, son of so-and-so, son of so-and-so, son of so-and-so.
Right.
Okay. The family relationship is extremely important in the Middle East. And so they recognize that by carrying the family names forward. It's more important that you're the son of Muhammad rather than your last name being Gilbert.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is people will take their father's names, and then they'll have the grandfather's name as a second middle name, and sometimes they'll have the great-grandfather's name as the third middle name. And so they'll just, you know, what happens is, you know how when people would come in at Ellis Island, people would abbreviate names and spell them wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Well, same thing happens when you translate. First of all, you've got characters that don't transliterate correctly. You see that in, you know, like look at Hezbollah. How many different ways can you spell Hezbollah?
Or Al-Qaeda, sure. Yeah.
Or Al-Qaeda, or, you know, any of those words. And neither of those words have any, really super strange, well, Al-Qaeda does have some strange spellings in there, but strange characters in there from an English perspective. But, for example, in Hebrew you have Hanukkah. Hanukkah you can spell with an H or a CH, and you can have an H on the end or not an H or two Ks. Same difference.
Right.
And what happens is when you look up somebody's name, it's like if you look up Smith and Smythe, they're not the same names. But mm-hmm. if you look up Muhammad spelled M-O-H-A-M-M-E-D and don't find it, and it's really spelled M-O-H-A-M-A-D,
mm-hmm.
it's causing confusion. And the soundic systems, of course, work with sounds that are more commonly used in English, and that was actually a solution the genealogist came up with, is used in genealogy software extensively. So anyway, they're starting to implement some of this in the Homeland Security databases, but they're not there yet. They don't have everything covered, and it's even the Soundex systems and the advanced Soundex software do not address the issue of multiple names. For example, you know, if Muhammad Abdullah Hashem, and I'm making up these names, I have absolutely no idea whether these are real people or not. These are totally made up names. So, you know, that name, that person may use any of those three names. He may be Muhammad Abdullah. He may be Muhammad Hashem. He may be Abdullah Hashem. He may not intend anything, any problems whatsoever. Okay? But he legally has the right to use those three names in this country. So, how do you deal with that?
And in Arabic culture, any of those would be correct.
Sure.
And this really caught my attention because I just read an article a couple of days earlier about the FBI's counterterrorism database, which has 659 million records in it. 659 million records. Now,
I probably a bunch of that's different spellings of the same name, I would hope.
Exactly. That's exactly the point. When you consider that that's more than twice the population of the United States, about 15% of the world's population, how many of those are duplicate spellings of the same person's name? You know,
different spellings of the same name. Well, I hope they are, because that means we're plugging holes.
Well, hopefully
I really
so.
I hope they are.
But the problem is, if you're looking for one particular name, and it's not cross-referenced with another name, which, unless I misunderstand your article, is the problem with the Homeland Security's approach right now. Is it doing us any good to have 659 million names or pieces of information in this database? Is Homeland Security working on... Now, you mentioned the Soundex problem, and some of this is starting to be incorporated into the software used by Homeland Security. But how big of a problem is this creating for law enforcement officials trying to find out whether your fictional Hassan Muhammad is a person of interest?
Well, let's go back and look at 9/11. One of the 9/11 hijackers was pulled for a traffic ticket going to, I believe it was in Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
They ran him through the database, and they didn't find him under the correct spelling. He walked off with a ticket. If they found him under the correct spelling, he would have been in jail because he was wanted under there were alerts out for him for immigration issues.
Okay.
9/11 might not have happened had this been in effect. Kind of scary concept.
Do you know if this is something that Homeland Security or the FBI plans to get fixed soon?
I think they're working on it. I don't know if they have it. I know they don't have it completely fixed. I don't know the extent to which that, you know, it's repaired. I imagine they're not going to put that information out in the public domain.
Well, sure.
Let's hope it's a lot farther along to being fixed than we think it is, and as a result, somebody will get careless and the bad guys will get picked up.
Well, again, this just struck me as something that was worth noting. Just the simple problem of transliterating Arabic to English is causing problems for Homeland Security. When we've got a database with 659 million records in it, and we can't be sure how many of those are duplicates of the same individual, but we may not, as you pointed out, we may not have everybody in there, or we may have somebody in there under a different spelling and not even know it until we get to it. Another article that you recently posted, there are a couple more that I want to get to, because it seems like at least once a week, Laura, you come up with something that really catches my attention. It's like a forehead slapper, like, duh, why isn't anybody paying attention to this, or why hasn't anyone else noticed this? Al-Qaeda websites in America. You've posted an article co-authored with Jeffrey Epstein on websites that are sort of hidden in plain sight. Can you tell us about that?
In this case, this was a real estate website out of Ohio that was actually somewhere embedded in the website, and actually the website has been pulled offline as it was offline when I looked for it today. They have been they have the official website of Abu Musab al-Suri, who is generally considered to be the leader of, or one of the leaders of Al-Qaeda in the UK. Now, he's currently in custody, so he's not doing any more posting these days. But at least we hope. We presume he's not. Now, of course, you know, some of these guys have ways of getting messages out, what happened is, if you go to the website, it looks like just a regular website, like your website or my website. But if you go to a specific directory within the website, you got all stories, propaganda, calling for suicide bombings and all sorts of stuff like that.
The website in question was a for sale by owner website, FSBOA.com, and tucked away in an inside directory was the website of the number two man of Al-Qaeda in the United Kingdom.
In Europe. In the United Kingdom, yeah.
Are there other websites like this on servers in the United States?
Absolutely. Are you kidding? I check my website every so often to make sure nobody's found a way to smuggle anything on it.
Every
business person really should get in the habit of doing that. I have no idea whether this website, the for sale by owner website, was put there with or without the consent of the registered owner of the site. What I do know is that website stayed active for several years. It wasn't just something that popped up one day then disappeared the next.
Well, I look at I look at my server stats and what's on the website on a fairly regular basis. I would know if somebody was piggybacking on my site. You would assume that the owner of this site would know.
Yeah, but a lot of people have multiple sites, and, they don't necessarily look at every single site. It, you know, the bottom line is, you probably should. You really need to look at your stats, see what pages are being accessed. And if you've got a parasite like this on your website, and you don't want it there, you need to notify law enforcement.
Law enforcement and your web hosting company as well.
Yeah, change your password too.
So how many of these sites are there out there? Do you have any idea?
I couldn't give you anywhere near an accurate number. We find more of them every month.
What was the most, say, outrageous example or ridiculous example, if you will?
When Terrorist 007 or Happy 007 hacked the, he didn't hack it, he just basically appropriated for his own use the FTP server of the Arkansas Department of Highways and Transportation. Interestingly enough, the same month that they were, the department received commendations for having such a technologically advanced group.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Actually, they actually have a pretty good system over there, and of course the guys in Arkansas were certainly horrified at this. They pulled it down immediately.
I mean, sure.
And they were, but it was Terrorist 007 was serving up videos on everything from the beheading of Nick Berg to all sorts of jihadi propaganda.
And he was doing it on the web server for the Arkansas mm-hmm. Department of Transportation.
That's kind of, that definitely took some
cojones.
Nerve, yeah.
Well, I'd have used
the on the air.
Well, yeah, I'd have used the Arabic word if I knew what it was. And I got a driver's license in the state of Arkansas back in 1987 88. And at the time it was basically like, you know, I waved my Pennsylvania driver's license at them and they said, okay, it's good enough for us. Step over here, take your picture. Hopefully they've upgraded their security measures since then.
I think most states have now.
The other article that you recently published, which I thought was very interesting, was an article titled "Rakan Bin Williams Exposed: The Identity of Al-Qaeda's Secret Weapon." Who is Rakan Bin Williams?
I believe Rakan Bin Williams is either the name of the cell or the possibly even the plot itself that was uncovered in the UK several weeks ago to blow up planes over the Atlantic. Basically, if you take a look at the people who were arrested and implicated in this plot, They are Rakan Bin Williams. They meet the description put forth in the Rakan Bin Williams post. They're, for the most part, either second generation Muslims who grew up in the UK, or they are new converts. They're people who were educated in the UK in the schools of the country. In some cases, they went to the churches. In some cases, they went to the mosques in the country. But the bottom line is, as the posting said, it's the next wave of terror will come from people who walk among you who cannot be discerned from everyone else. You're not going to recognize them. You can't profile them. And that's something we really have to keep in mind when we start complaining about TSA taking aside, you know, that mom with the baby over there and putting her through extra security. You have no way of knowing anymore whether a terrorist is, you know, that cute girl who lives next door or that nice young man you went to school with all those years. You don't know anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The one commonality is adherence to radical Islam.
So basically,
that gets into some really hairy political stuff when you start talking about profiling people by religion, regardless of how justified it is.
So basically,
civil liberties violations like you wouldn't believe.
Well, sure. Basically, you just throw all of the profiles out the window. Except for that one.
The only solution, since you can't profile people, you can't just search people on the basis of their religion. You have to search everybody. That's mm-hmm. the only other solution left. Now, if you go look at El Al, the Israeli Airlines,
mm-hmm.
you know how long it's been since they've had a hijacking? Long, long, long time. Like decades?
Yeah, I was going to say 1970s, if I remember.
Yeah, it's been a long time. They profile. They make no. They make. So they don't apologize. They do it. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to Israel, what airline do you want to fly on?
LL.
Yeah. Well, I thought it's safest. They just don't have hijackings because they don't care whose feelings they hurt. You want to fly on their airline? You're welcome to come fly. Deal with our security.
So the now, where did you first hear about Rakan Ben Williams?
Rakan Ben Williams first appeared in a posting from Global Islamic Media Front back in November of 2005, and then he's popped up two or three times since then in posts from Rakan Ben Williams, some from Global Islamic Media. Some have been rehashes of old posts, and occasionally we'll see a new post. Haven't had a new post from him in a while that I can think of. Since I think probably March, April time frame.
What is the Global Islamic Media Front?
Global Islamic Media Front is another one of those. It's kind of like PR Wire for terrorists.
They've got that too, huh?
You know, they have mailing lists. I mean, you know, heck, within an hour after the last videotape came out that was on the American, I'm on Al Qaeda's mailing list, and I had an email saying, "Guess what? We just put out this new videotape." Of course, everybody knows it. Law enforcement knows it. You know. Yeah.
You know,
the Al Qaeda mailing list.
Not to make too much light of this, but I wonder how long it will be before we start seeing these videotapes with sponsorships. Brought to you by, fill in the blank.
I'm sure they probably thought of it.
Yeah.
Well, it definitely looks like they've gotten a new wave of graduates from some video production school somewhere. So they're definitely increasing into, they're getting more and more techno savvy every day.
Well, you know, it's not too far outside the realm of possibility because there's a new rave of immigration protests in Chicago that are supposed to take place this week, sponsored by Miller Beer, believe it or not. So it may be coming on the Islamic websites as well. So which of these sects – now, there are differences within Islam between Sunni and Shia. Are there differences within those sects as well that are more dangerous than others?
There are. Within Sunni Islam, for example, you have just kind of your mainstream Sunni Islam, and then you have the Wahhabis and the Salafists who believe in a strict interpretation of Islam to where basically all revisions and interpretations stop at the death of the Prophet Muhammad. In other words, everything that was valid and part of the law as it has evolved as of the date Muhammad died is basically the way it stands now. Now, of course, there have been a few changes in the world since then, and it does provide some challenges. The Wahhabis and the other Salafist groups are the most dangerous at this point.
Okay, now the nation of Iran is controlled by the Shia sect, or clerics of the Shia sect. What is it about their belief system and this hidden imam? Are you familiar with that and how that all works into their ideology?
Yeah, basically Shia Islam and Sunni Islam split back partially over the succession, over the line of succession to the Prophet Muhammad after his death. A couple of successors down, they just had a kind of big falling out. But that's very, very much oversimplified. But eventually the Shiites also developed this belief in the 12th Imam, who is supposedly the hidden Imam, who disappeared. He didn't die. He just kind of went into hiding or seclusion or just kind of went off the map. And it's believed that he will come back and help usher in the golden age of another golden age of Islam. And their prophecies include an incredible amount of basically violent chaos. To summarize, there are many who believe that the current president of Iran, who definitely ascribes to this 12th Imam theory, There are many who believe he wants to help. He believes he has a role in ushering in this new age.
Hmm. Sort of,
then, you know, set the stage for the end times.
Sort of like an apocalyptic view from an Islamic perspective. They're looking for Armageddon, but to play out in a different way from Christians who are interpreting the prophecies of Ezekiel, Daniel, and John.
They believe that the Mahdi will come back in. He will join Jesus and fight the Antichrist, who he believes it will be, because they believe the Antichrist is Christian, not Muslim, or you know, any other religion.
Yeah, we did an interview with Dr. Michael S. Heiser, who's written a very interesting book called Islam and Armageddon, which focuses on that and how that, in his view, the Antichrist is going to be someone who can actually show Muslims and Christians and Jews how their prophetic writings of the end times all can be synchronized and synthesized. Very interesting times ahead. Not a whole lot of fun, but certainly not boring. Laura, what sort of services and information do you make available, do you offer at your website?
Well, what we do is we go through and we'll monitor the boards, and if we put out daily reports. Well, sometimes daily, honestly, some days it's just kind of quiet out there, and so we don't fill your email box up unless there's something going on. We offer both a free service, which is not nearly the level of detail, and then we offer a paid service, which is pretty nominal. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of $45 a quarter. Basically, it's under $20 a month. We'll also do, for corporations, we will do translations as needed. Many companies do business in the Arab world or wish to do business in the Arabic-speaking world, and we'll assist with translations both English to Arabic and Arabic to English.
And your website?
And then, of course, we have our books there, too.
Right. And website is lauramansfield.com. The books include Inshallah, which is the story of how a young American woman from the Deep South finds herself married to a Muslim radical extremist. That book is classified as nonfiction, Laura, or?
Oh, it's nonfiction. It's my life story.
And again, we'll talk about that at some future a future program. And the most recent book, His Own Words, a translation of the writings of Dr. Ayman al-Zawahiri. Again, getting back to the new tape featuring Dr. al-Zawahiri and Azam the American, you consider this to be sort of a warning of something that might take place?
I think it's something we need to watch. I think it definitely has an ominous tone to it. Bear in mind, we have no idea what Al-Qaeda's timetable is, so they could be sending us a warning on something they really don't intend to do anything about for, a couple of years. But if you go back and look at Bin Laden's statement in January of this year, he says, we have attacks planning that are in the planning stages. You'll see them in your country, in your homes, when we're ready. We don't know when he's going to be ready, so we have to, we have to keep our eyes open. We need to know what's going on around us, and so that in the unlikely event we happen, the bottom line is, this is a big country. The chances, even if there was a terrorist attack of any one individual being hurt, the chances of you being that person are pretty slim. But still, we don't, obviously it's something we don't want to see happen, and so people just need to start being, increase their level of vigilance, and basically, you can't change. You can't stop living. You can't let the terrorists win. That's what they want us to do. They want to frighten us. We need to say, no, we're sorry. We're not going to be frightened. We'll be more careful. We'll do what we need to do to protect ourselves, but we will continue to live our lives.
Absolutely. And with just about a week ago, before the fifth anniversary of the attack of September 11th, 2001, do you expect another tape or message coming from Al-Qaeda within the next week or so?
I wouldn't be surprised at all to see one.
Laura Mansfield, author and intelligence analyst, also a translator of Arabic, and as such, a very important asset in the ongoing war on terror. Laura, thank you for joining us on PID Radio.
Thank you very much.
You know, if you really find Laura Mansfield's take on politics and Middle Eastern events provocative and you want to know more, you can go to lauramansfield.com. She's got links to her books. In fact, she's given us copies of her books, and we're going to be reading those and posting our reviews, not only on our websites, but also at amazon.com. We'll have in the show notes, I assume, links to the books so you can pick them up yourselves if you want to. I don't know if they're in libraries or not. They ought to be. They should be in every library. You know, if you want to do something for your local library, buy a copy. Give it to them if they don't have one, because this is the kind of meat and potatoes information that every American, I think, should have, because we need to understand Middle Eastern culture.
We can't really understand the nature of the conflict without understanding what they believe. And that's why we had Mike Heiser as a guest a few weeks ago. And Laura, having lived there, brings another level of understanding to the mindset of those who want to do us harm. You've heard us raise questions and criticize the American government about the way it's pursuing this war on terror and the way it's prosecuting the war in Iraq and Afghanistan in the past. But we're not naive. We know that there are people who want to hurt us. What we're trying to strike is a balance here between questioning and criticizing. There are those who oppose the administration simply because it's the other political party. And in so doing, they blind themselves to the fact that there is a real threat here. In fact, as you might remember, we reported on the investigation that Doug Hagman and the Northeast Intelligence Network did into the young man who blew himself up outside the football game at the University of Oklahoma last fall. Even though I was standing there, you know, filling cups, I kept my eyes open and was looking around for people who were inappropriately dressed on a warm September day, people who were acting strangely. Didn't see anything, thankfully, but it was the kind of thing that just made me a little more aware yesterday of what was going on around me than I would have been on a typical football Saturday.
Well, you know, I think a lot of people might say, Columbia, Missouri, what kind of target is that? It doesn't really matter where the target is, quote unquote, is located. If you can strike terror into the hearts of, in fact, I would say selecting a non-obvious target would even be better, because that way, if they'll strike there, they'll strike anywhere.
Exactly. And, you know, in the future, we may go into some reasons why Columbia might not be a bad target,
In fact, we're beginning to think that, well, we're beginning to recognize perhaps why God put us in Columbia, Missouri.
We've got potentially a new Department of Homeland Security biohazard laboratory that may be built here in the next few years.
And we're approximately on the 39th parallel.
Yeah.
You know, we are discovering, take a look at the map and see what all is on the 39th parallel, and also look at anything close to 104th longitude. You'll find those very, very interesting, folks.
What did we discover in the 104th longitude? Devil's Tower, which was from
104.5 is the approximate angle between the hydrogen atoms in water.
So it's a significant
If you had the hydrogen atoms, this is how I think of it. This is why I consider water, which of course spiritually is extremely important. But if you flip it so that the hydrogen atoms are on the bottom, you have a pyramid with an eye on top.
Really?
If you think of oxygen as an eye.
Wow. That's very interesting.
That's sort of my little insight, folks.
Does David Flynn know about this?
I doubt it. He's probably going to take it and run with it. That guy.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of learning, those of you who have been corresponding with me over the last few weeks, or if you've looked on the forum, you may have noticed that I said I was going to go back to school this fall. Because of everything, I felt the best thing to do would be to also take that off the plate for now. It was way too rushed, so I'm going to go back to school next semester. And I'm planning, if everything goes well, and, you know, God provides, then I'll be studying classical studies. I'll be studying ancient languages and ancient literature and, you know, all the kind of geeky stuff that I just love doing.
Yeah, and a lot of stuff that relates to the kind of things that we've talked about here with people like Stan Dale and David Flynn and Beth Vey. And
I'm chasing after Mike Heiser.
Mike Heiser, yes. That would be, yeah, some very, very cool stuff. And then relating it all together through your writer's mind could create some very interesting discussions in the months ahead.
It will indeed. Well, you know what? We had a great interview today with Laura Mansfield. We're going to try to do a few more things like that over the next few weeks as God provides some great contacts. So keep listening on Sundays. I think we're still going to try for Sundays.
Yeah, I think that's the best, most convenient anyway.
Because for at least the next week or two, I'm just laying off the news. If something big breaks, then I guess I'll have to delve in. But that's the reason I did not participate in the interview with Laura Mansfield. I would love to have been in there. But I frankly felt that I was just going to be in the way. So it was just Eric and Laura, and they've sort of struck up a nice camaraderie on the airwaves.
Well, and in fact, she's introduced me to another gentleman named Jeffrey Epstein, who is has conducted one and is setting up another counterterrorism symposium, which is designed to educate people on, again, the nature of the conflict and how we can be aware of what's going on around us and protect ourselves. So I will likely have him in as an interview guest on the radio.
So does that mean we get to go to, like, DEF CONs and stuff?
Yeah. Like, you know, like comic cons and, you know, science fiction cons. Yeah, DEF CON.
Rather con.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of con and the Wrath con.
Glad you mentioned.
Friday, September 8th, is the 40th anniversary, 40 years since man boldly went where no man had gone before.
That's right. The voyages of the start of the USS Enterprise began on September 8th, 1966.
I was there. I watched that opening episode.
I don't remember, but I was slightly younger.
I was sitting at my sister Faye's house because she and her husband had a color television.
Ah. Well, I learned how to do that eyebrow thing from Spock.
I know, and you really, that's why I married you.
It's either that or Groucho. I can't remember who.
I like that too.
In fact, I contacted locally. There's a chapter of the guys who belong to the Federation, you know, the Star Trek geeks who meet once a week.
There's a local ship here.
Yeah, the USS Horizon. So I've contacted the captain and his executive officer trying to get an interview for Friday. So hopefully
schedule a Horizon event.
Yeah. So just a nod, you know, we are science fiction geeks at heart. And as odd as it sounds, being Christians and fans of science fiction, because so much science fiction is humanistic, humanist in its worldview.
You know, real science does not leave God out.
Exactly right. Real science reveals the majesty and the glory of God. And the more science knows, the more it realizes that there is so much yet to be discovered. Mm-hmm. And the more they realize, I think, that it all hangs together in a very precise manner.
Mm-hmm.
Almost as though it had been designed that way.
Whoa, that's a good way to leave.
Yep. Well, we appreciate you sticking with us through another hour of PID Radio. As always, we welcome your comments at radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
And we'd love to see you at the forum. I'm not there lately. Actually, I don't hang out there very much anyway. Derek does. I'm not a forum
squashing spammers.
He's on the spam button all the time. So if you're joining thinking you're just going to advertise spam or generally disrupt, forget it.
Advertising spam would actually be an improvement over the things that have been advertised there.
I like
there.
Fried spam.
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah, fried, actually grilled spam is really good, believe it or not. Well, we digress. Until next time, live long and prosper, everybody. This is Sharon Gilbert.
I'm Derek Gilbert. Thanks for listening to PID Radio.
Bye-bye, everybody.
is PID Radio.